this shocked me. I had a couple men, and they were young and more of like the millennial generation. They were in their 20s. And I had a couple of them say that, you know, they love women, but they've been so wounded by women, the ones that they had met. Not all women do that, obviously, but the ones that they had met, and these were two different guys. And they said that they've had so much drama and rejection that they experienced from the women that they attracted that they don't want to be with a woman, and they'll be with a guy, but not because they want to. And I was floored. I was absolutely floored. And this is one of the reasons that...
You can gauge the health of a society based on two simple metrics, how they treat women and how they treat children. And if you haven't noticed in our dying society, we don't treat children well, obviously, but also we don't treat women that well in all of their different roles, just as a woman, whether she be a businesswoman or a stay-at-home wife, as a mom. None of those things are really cherished in our society, which is bad. Really, really bad. We've cheapened relationships. We've cheapened sex. We've cheapened what it is to be husband and wife. And instead, we've traded those truths. The Bible says we've traded the truth for a lie. We've traded those truths of how things should be for lies, for comfort, for frivolities and entertainment. You might have seen all over the internet, because of our obsession with the Roman Empire, present company included, that we've traded what's good and righteous and just for bread and circuses. So that's what we have. It is the American delusion. It's insane. And we've got hookup culture. We've got cheapened and manipulated views on everything. We've got the LGBTQIA, LMNOP. I'm just sure the entire alphabet's been overtaken at this point, just destroying and perverting things in America. So now we're seeing record numbers of men just say, I don't want to play this game. I'll just do a career. I'll just be a hobbyist of things and stay home and not worry about dating or building up a family. I'll just build up a career and build up some hobbies and skill sets instead. And I'm not talking about the adolescent boys that just play video games all throughout their life, but actual men, learned men, men that otherwise are pretty decent dudes, are really kind of taking themselves out of the dating game, which is a huge problem. Guys, tonight we're talking with a guest who's going to give you the inside scoop on protecting your relationships, solid tactics for strengthening your marriage, for finding Mr. Right, if that's not presented itself in your life. Our guest is international speaker, TV producer, and host, Joanna Harabedian. Joanna is a three-time national title pageant holder, including Miss America 2019 through 2020, which is definitely a first for the Joe Mobley Show. She is also an author who wrote the must-read book, 7 Mistakes Women Make to Repel Good Men and How to Reverse Them. Guys, strap in. This interview is going to be awesome. You're not going to want to miss it. It comes up right after this. Guys, welcome back to the Joe Mobley Show. I am still Joe Mobley, your host and the uncloseted conservative. Today's episode is brought to you by Z-Stack. Guys, Z-Stack Life doesn't cure COVID. It doesn't cure illness. What the powers that be, the FDA, YouTube, and all of the other overlords allow me to say is that it is an immune booster and a nutritional supplement. Guys, Dr. Zelenko spent his life. He traded his existence for our health. His products are all GMP certified, kosher certified, and 100% made in the USA in an FDA certified facility, whatever that means to you. You know, that and $2 will get you a Coke. Go to thejoemobleyshow.com/Z-Stack for the very best prices on all Z-Stack vitamins. Use promo code Mobley at checkout for more savings. thejoemobleyshow.com/Z-Stack, promo code Mobley. Mobley is spelled M-O-B-L-E-Y. All right, Joanna, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank Thank you, Joe. Such an honor to be here. I am blessed and highly favored. We're going to have an awesome
conversation
for everyone today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So time always runs out in these podcasts. So just quickly, tell the people who you are, and then we'll get right into the content. I read all of the publicly available sections of your book, and I'm really excited to get into it. So before we get into it, tell the people who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm Joanna Haravedian, and I'm the author of Seven Mistakes Women Make That Repel Good Men and How to Reverse Them. That's the key right there. I graduated from the University of Ouch, That Hurt, in the arena of romance. I initially married Mr. Wrong. We'll call him Mr. Wrong, Mr. Potential, and Mr. Right for, I know it's cliche, but we're teaching today. And so I initially married Mr. Wrong, and that was sort of the starting of hell. And then I got out of that. God saved me. And then I began my journey of learning how to become the woman that God has created me to be and attract the man of my dreams. And it took a long time, but I finally got it. And now I'm here to help women find their happily ever after. Whether you're married, how to recharge your marriage, how to reconnect. Whether you're single, how to attract the right guy that God has for you. And most importantly, how to maintain that relationship and have a good, healthy marriage.
Oh, absolutely. Marriage is not a fire and forget weapon, people. It's something that you work on daily. So you say in your book that you don't just want people to find Mr. Right. And by people, guys, we mean specifically women. That's who needs to find. Those other relationships, we're not talking about those. But you write about finding Mr. Right, but also how to keep him. Can you talk about that?
You know, one of the things that I learned in my single years, I was single for almost 2 decades. So it was a while. And I learned all of these mistakes during that time period. And one of the biggest mistakes that I cover in my book in detail, and I take the women through practical application, is not being able to receive a compliment. Now, that was me. And this is very common. My husband, David, and I were ministers, and, you know, we travel all around and we preach and we minister. And this is one of the biggest areas that I have seen across the board in our travels and meeting so many different people is women struggle with receiving a compliment. And one of the things that God did with me to help me come into a revelation about this is he gave me a vision. And in this vision, I was preparing this beautiful bouquet of flowers. And I put all this thought into it. It was stunning. And it was for my really good friend. And then in the vision, I thought about the colors and everything. So I then hand her the bouquet, and she looks at the bouquet and she scowls and she snatches the bouquet out of my hand and slaps me with the bouquet, and petals fly everywhere. And I'm shocked. I'm like, oh. And then I get angry, and then I feel rejected because she rejected my gift. And what the Holy Spirit showed me was a compliment. The bouquet represents the compliment that someone gives me. So when I reject their gift, which is their compliment, then I'm literally, it's like I'm slapping them in the face and I'm rejecting them, and I make them feel angry and rejected. Well, what happens after that? They're not going to want to compliment me mm-hmm. anymore. So classic example of this is I was on a date. This was years ago, way before I got married. And the guy, you know, he was really nice and everything. And he complimented me on my outfit. Well, I was having one of those bad girl days where your stomach feels bloated and you feel ugly. And, you know, I'm just being real here. You know, ladies can relate to what I'm saying. And so I blurted out, oh, you know, well, I got this on sale, and, you know, actually I really look fat. And he looked shocked, and I was clueless. I did not understand why he looked shocked. And well, needless to say, we never went out on a date again because he couldn't believe I said that. And here's the interpretation of what I told him. I basically said to him, by rejecting his compliment and what I said, my body's ugly. I don't believe what you say, and what you're saying is not true. And therefore I'm rejecting you. Go out with somebody else. And that's what he did. So that's a big thing, right? And I teach women how to get over that and some other examples of what that looks like, because we don't realize we're doing that.
That's good. That's good. And in my experience, and I, viewers, listeners, you know this about me. I'm not one to just down and denigrate men. I think that pop culture does way too much of that. But in this instance, I think this is true. Men with relationships or with cues with women, it's an area that we're generally a little dumb in. But one of the things that you could be assured of is a lot of times if we give you a compliment, it's pretty genuine. I can't recall a time, absent of the instance that you see in the classic reel where wife, girlfriend says, "Does this make me look fat?" No man is going to say yes. We've picked up on that. We have that emotional intelligence. We know that social skill. Yes. But all the other times, so this guy, he probably believed what he said.
And I'll give you another classic example, because that was when I was single. And so I'll share another example. I interviewed a lot of different men as part of my research for the book because I wanted to get their input. And I do want to start off by saying that this is not a blame game. I liken it to this. You have a coin. One side of the coin is men. The other side of the coin is women. And each is 100% responsible for themselves and their actions. And so I just want to preface that. This is not about saying women are bad and they're doing bad things. No, it's about learning how to take responsibility for ourselves and come into awareness of what we don't realize that we're doing. So all that to say is one of the men that I interviewed, he shared a story with me, and he's married, and he shared how he had bought some lingerie for his spouse, his wife. And she looked at it and she said, "Well, what do you want? Why did you buy me this?" And so instead of receiving the gift, what did she just do? She trained him how not to buy her something, and also basically said, "Well, I don't want to have sex with you." That's really the messaging. Instead of saying, "Wow, how thoughtful, honey. Thank you. I'm going to look sexy in this." And then he would be inspired to buy her more gifts. And that's not to be manipulative or anything, but it's learning how to appreciate and thank and affirm your guy when he does something for you. And that's in chapter 5 called The Reverse Trainer. We train people how to treat us. So are you reverse training people how to treat you bad and disrespect you or not compliment you or give you a gift? Or are you training them that, yes, I receive your gift and I appreciate that?
That's a super risky and bold move for a guy. I've been married 12 years, and I've probably bought my wife 3, maybe 4 articles of clothing, like a dress or a shirt or something.
Right.
Because women, goodness gracious, the fashion stuff, like guys, we've got 3 or 4 options. Women have options that I've not heard of or seen. And every day my wife, she knows the names for all, like it's a crop top or it's a this or it's a that. And I'm like, "What? How do you know this?" But she does.
She does. Well, you know what my husband does is he takes me shopping. So I pick out my gift and vice versa. We go shopping and he gets to pick out his gift because, you know, he's got picky taste and, you know, he knows my taste. And so we go shopping together and we buy each other gifts and then everybody's happy.
So guys, you know, this is the first interview that I've done in about 7 months, which is so much fun for me. Sam and I have just been doing the show, just the two of us. So I completely neglected my duty as a host to tell you where you can get this book. Wherever you're watching or listening to this, there's a link below. You can click on that. The website is 7mistakesbook.com. That's the number 7mistakesbook.com, mistakes with an S at the end. So in the first chapter of your book, you warn against the "what's in it for me" syndrome, which this type of analysis is good for everyone, whether you're married, honestly, if you're a guy or a girl. But talk to us about the harm of the "what's in it for me" syndrome.
I'm glad you brought that up, Joe. It's a really good question. And it's what got me in trouble in marrying Mr. Wrong to begin with. And the WIFM syndrome, what's in it for me syndrome, you know, you have a healthy with them and you have an unhealthy with them. The unhealthy one is what I focus on in that chapter. And it's about having a mindset of what others are going to do for you. And that's the focus. It's all about me, 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 me. And so to give you an example, when I married Mr. Wrong the first time, I married, and this was after a lot of self-reflection, being heartbroken because, you know, my marriage didn't work out and my dreams were shattered at that time. And I asked God to hold up a spiritual mirror to my face. And I said, God, how did I get in this mess? How did I end up with a man that was so broken and did all these things? And my dreams are shattered. And I thought you told me to marry this guy. And then the Holy Spirit began to open my eyes and my heart. And, you know, it took courage. It took a lot of courage to ask the Holy Spirit to show me myself, because I could have blamed him for everything that he'd done and not take any responsibility in the failure of the marriage. And so God began to show me what I was doing. And my motivation for getting married was the Whiffen syndrome. Because if I'm honest, the Whiffen syndrome for me to get married was what I thought that my husband was going to provide for me. You know, my expectation was that he's going to take care of me. He's going to provide for me and he's going to help my dreams come true. He's going to help me with my singing career. Talk about pressure. And I didn't realize at that time that those were selfish motivations. And it wasn't a mindset of how we're going to mutually serve each other. It was how he's going to serve me and what I'm entitled to get and how I should be doted on. Now, I wasn't mean, but that was my selfish motivation. And so one of the top reasons that divorce happens is selfishness. And this is for men and it is for women. And so it's being able to identify what areas in my life have I been this? What have my inner motivations been for wanting a man? And I can't tell you how many times I've heard a woman say, I just want a man to take care of me. Several of my friends would say that, and several of them are still single. And so, you know, so also when we have a mindset like that, we can attract someone who might be very broken and they have some serious issues. And then you go through hell. You know, the very next day after we were married, he told me he didn't love me. So that was the beginning of hell for me in that, in that previous period. Yeah. Wow, no, that's intense. Incredible. And I talk, and I discuss this in my book. I'm very candid because that really, I was able to learn from what I didn't do and what I should have done. You know, I allowed myself to get pressured to get married. Nobody forced me to get married, but because I wanted to be married, I wanted to have a wife. I wanted to have a husband, and we did it the right way. We didn't have sex beforehand. And so I thought, hey, I'm doing all the steps. I'm doing all the right things. And then I ended up in this mess. And so it was in that ugly cry moment when I asked God to hold up a mirror to my face and show me what happened. And Whiffen was the core of it. And so as we come into these revelations and we begin to identify and awareness starts to happen, then we can start to make changes. But if we're not aware of what we're doing, how are we going to change to get different results? So if you're married, then you want to be able to have a good connection with your partner. You want to know how you can reestablish connection with your husband if you've been estranged. You know, in these last few years, we've had a lot of trauma here in America with lockdowns and losing jobs and losing businesses and losing friends and family members. And so the divorce rate has skyrocketed. And then and I love what you touched on in the beginning of the segment is that the media has really brought in this stereotype against men to emasculate them and to promote this female dominance and what I say is right. We're under my thumb. Well, what is that? How's that working for America? If our divorce rate increased by 34%, it's not. And so my book has 7 core principles to help us get back into that place. Whether you're single or whether you're married, you've got to have these skills. And I learned these skills and I use these skills. My husband in the book, we have the epilogue, and there's a note from David, my husband, and he shares his experience with me as a wife and what I do in our marriage and what I bring into our marriage. Because if I hadn't been able to but understand what the WIFM was and where I was selfish and make changes in my heart not to be selfish, have that mindset of it's all about me and what you're going to do for me, I wouldn't have attracted a man like David, because he wouldn't have been attracted to that frequency in my heart. And the other thing that's very interesting is that our heart reflects and emanates a frequency, a field 6 feet from us. Did you know that?
I did not.
I studied that. And so whatever's in our heart is reflected. Now people can't see it, but you're either going to draw something good or you're going to attract something bad. And so getting to that place of healing where we are now attracting something good, now we see the blessings of God in our life. And we're not going, where are you, God? Why aren't you answering my prayers? You know?
Mm-hmm. I've just started learning some stuff about my undergraduate degrees in music. But I just started learning some stuff about frequencies, a whole different topic about
clothes
and different objects and things and how they have frequencies, which again, science is constantly trying to catch up with God's revelation. You know, things that were established in Genesis. And it's like, yeah, this is how physics, this is how science works. It's what God said. And, you know, absent, if the people don't cry out, then the rocks and the trees will sing God's praises. This is way old school, Old Testament, but, you know, Leviticus about the different fabrics, and it turns out that they have positive and negative frequencies, and your clothes can cause negative health impact. But I've not heard this heart thing, but I'm the kind of nerd that will look it up and geek out over that.
Yes, look it up. It's really fascinating. You know, I also do music, and I play in solfeggio frequency. So like my keyboards, I play in 432 and
532.
Yeah, but that's a whole other subject.
You said something about you singing, and I was going to ask you, is that what you did on the pageant circuit for your talent?
Well, you know, for the Miss America pageant, there wasn't a talent. So it's more focused. Yeah. So for the MS America pageant, what you do is we have four categories. So one category, which is a big one, is the judges panel interview. So that's the one that you make it or break it there, you know, in terms of really showing who you are. And you have six judges. Well, we had six at that time, and you don't know what they're going to ask you, and you have 3 minutes. And so to, you know, show them who you are and why they should, you know, vote for you, will score. And so then the other area is the onstage question. And then the other area is, of course, the walk, the sportswear, and then, of course, the evening gown.
You know, I feel so bad as a friend. I should know this, but now I find myself wondering. But I think my co-host, Samantha, did pageants when her and her husband were in Colorado. So sorry, Samantha, I should totally know this. We've been friends for like 2 years at this point. Just fascinating. Fascinating. And I'm glad that you said WIFM, because I was like, this is an acronym. There has to be a way to say it. I did not know what it was. So big major problem with WIFM, or revelation from WIFM, is you are the person that you bring into all of your relationships, your work relationships, your friendships, and your dating and marriage relationship. So much can be solved by what can I do? What can I change in myself? Or what can the Holy Spirit change in me to manifest in the better relationship? And that's what, while you were talking about what you went through and the revelations that you were having, that's how I'm hearing it. It's like, how can I work on myself? Like my wife puts in her content, like, oh, how do you get your kids to behave better? Work on your marriage. How do you get your, you know, this to be better? Work on your marriage. Well, when the question is, how do you make your marriage better? It's, you have to work on yourself. It's not trying to get this other person to do the things that satisfy your will. No, it's this mutual serving type of thing. And really, guys, the real burden is on you to serve and love your wife as Christ did the church. But I just thought all that while you were talking about that story. I can't believe that happened on your first day or the day after you were married. Like, the first year of marriage is rough, but geez.
Yeah, but the second day, I don't love you. And you're like, what? What did you just say?
The first year is rough, but the second day is usually pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's interesting because I've had, you know, some different people say, well, you know, I'm married and why should I buy this book? Or, well, my husband does this and I don't need this book and he does that and he does that. And so I can attest that, you know, in the first round with Mr. Wrong, I initially blamed him for everything. Everything was his fault because of all the ugly behaviors that happened. But when I started looking at myself and what I'm doing, then that it opened up a whole new world for me internally. And I want to share a quick story. I have a conference called Women of Royalty Conference, and it's about helping women come into a deeper healing in themselves. And so at this conference, I had this woman I've been coaching, and so she came to the conference, and she had her divorce paper ready to go. It was signed. The attorney had looked it over. She was going to hand him, her husband, those divorce papers that weekend when she got back. And let me tell you something. God did a miracle through the conference. You know, we taught some of these principles, and then we also had healing and all these amazing things. Well, she calls me back later, a few weeks after the conference, and she says, oh my gosh, Joanna, you're just not going to believe what's happened. And I said, what? And she said, my husband has completely changed. And I started laughing. I said, really? Well, what's made him change? Well, I'm doing this different and I'm doing that different. And so it was what she was doing different. She had learned to change her responses to him. She was able to identify these, what I call superhero deactivator behaviors that she was engaging in that she didn't realize that she was doing. And part of it was, you know, out of pain and retaliation, she would say snarky things and, you know, and all those things, and the hamster wheel went round and round. But after the conference and after really starting to apply these principles, her whole marriage turned around. And then months later, she called me back and she said, oh my gosh, Joanna, I am more in love with my husband than when I married him. She says, I can't believe how beautiful our marriage is. And we've had a lot of hard talks and I'm learning how to affirm him. I'm learning to do things different and react different. And our marriage has completely turned around. Thank you so much. So that right there was like, wow, she did it. She had the courage to look inside of herself. She had the courage to see what she was doing wrong. It didn't make what the things that her husband was doing wrong, that were mistakes, didn't make that right. But she then took responsibility for herself and worked on her side of the coin. And as a result, she began to change her responses. So like you said, Joe, we can't change other people, but we can choose to change how we respond. That's a big deal. It's a game changer.
So you just brought it up. You say in your book that sometimes women don't know that they're doing this behavior. And I like lean in and I'm like, oh, what is it? And it says superhero deactivators. And I'm like, I don't know what that is. What is that? Can you talk to us about that?
Yes. Okay. So God has innately created men to want to be a superhero. They want to, you know, come in and help and do the right thing. And, you know, and they love that, right? But what happens is, and especially right now with this media programming that we have going on of emasculating men, when we talk to our guy in a certain way, whether it's shaming him, demeaning him, diminishing him, I'm going to give you an example of a response. There's two ways that I could have handled the situation when David and I were getting to know each other. So he had put me on hold. We were on the phone, and of course he's in ministry, so he's on the phone all the time and he does business. So put me on hold. I thought he was getting back on the phone, and I was left on the eternal hold. So I let it go, and then it happened again.
I've done this.
And I know. And then it happened again, and I'm put on eternal hold again, and I'm like, okay, this is not going to fly for me. So I prayed. I said, Lord, I'm really irritated right now, but you know, help me in my irritation and help me see this from a different perspective. And so when we talked the next time, we were both in a good space. Timing is everything. And so I said, you know, David, can I ask you a question? And he's like, sure. I always start with that. Can I ask you a question? Sure. Now I have permission to say what I want to say. So I said, you know, I know that it's never your intention to, you know, disrespect me or dishonor me on purpose. I know you would never do that. And he's like, oh no, I wouldn't. And I said, well, you know, can you do me a favor? And he said, yeah. I said, well, next time we're on the phone and you get a phone call come in, can you just let me know and that you need to get off the phone? And I don't have a problem with that because the last couple of times I feel like my time's been disrespected and I feel dishonored. And I know you would never do that on purpose. Oh no, I'm really sorry. And guess what? He corrected the behavior. But I could have said to him the superhero deactivator way, I could have said, you know, that was really rude what you did. I can't believe you left me on hold twice already, turtle hold. You could have just let me know. So you see the difference of how I responded because now I had the skills to respond in a way that activated a superhero. I gave him an opportunity. I gave him the benefit of the doubt to say, oh no, of course I wouldn't. Oh wow, he didn't realize he was doing that. He assumed that I knew that he had to get off the phone because he had a ministry call, right? So it's those little things, little keys unlock big doors, and big doors swing on small hinges. And so now, had he not responded to, you know, I feel disrespected this way, and he responded the opposite and kept doing it, then that would have been a red flag for me. All right, if this guy's not responding to this the way that I'm speaking to him, and honoring my request, he's not going to do that when we're married. I would have, you know, it would have never gone anywhere. So that was a clue for me on how he was going to respond, which way, and it was a clue for him how I chose to react to what he had done. And so when we have these skills when we're in marriage, because, you know, conflict is going to come up when you got two people who are completely different, but it's having a skill set, which is what I teach in the book, those seven principles of skills that you develop so that when it does arise, you're going to have a better outcome than the eternal hamster wheel of blame game. You did this, you did that, you did this, you did that, and then nobody wins.
One of the biggest game changers in my marriage and in my personal relationships that I got from one of the counselors that I saw for many years back in my Army days was that benefit of the doubt aspect that you mentioned. You know, there's like a human decency factor where just a person, by virtue of being a person, they should get some grace. But how much more so your family, how much more so your spouse, and mm-hmm. what it sounds like you were doing when you were not doing the superhero deactivator behavior is saying, hey, I know that I have such a good reason to believe that you are not acting in this way. That's not the character of this man. You know, if I feel aggrieved by my wife, I have to think she's not intentionally trying to make me feel this way. Now, of course, the counselor would say, you know, the classic counselor things. Well, don't say you did this, you did this. Tell the person, you know, the event doesn't matter, but kind of like how it made you feel. And you said, hey, this made me feel a bit disrespected, like my time is wasted. But the basic premise is, I know that you don't want me to feel this way, or I know that you don't want to be the person treating me this way. That approach is just worth its weight in gold. I mean, it's changed my life from receiving speak like that and being able to give messages like that. I mean, this stuff works on colleagues too, guys. Like, now I can't say to my boss or I can't say to a teammate, like, I know that you don't want to treat me this way, but I can still speak to them in that manner. And it gets results. I'll tell you what,
it does. And I used to be in the workplace. Now, Dave and I, we have our ministry and we also have our business. We work from home. But when I was in the workplace, I used to have a boss who was very demeaning and it was very challenging working for him. And at that time, I was having to learn how to speak to someone who was publicly shaming me, demeaning me in front of my colleagues, pointing out my mistakes, right? A lot of things that we women can do, some of us. So as I learned my skills, I was able to finally get to a place where I said, you know, so-and-so, I know you would never intentionally speak to me this way, because he railed me for a mistake that I didn't even make. But when I started out that crucial conversation that way, with the assumption, I know you would never intentionally do that. Oh no, I wouldn't do that. I said, are you stressed? No, I'm not stressed. Right. So immediately it put him in a different mode. And then I said, well, you know, can I ask you a question? Sure. You know, next time, if you see a mistake that I make, I'm coachable. I appreciate you pointing it out, but please, can you please do it privately and not publicly? Because when it's done publicly, I feel very humiliated. And I know you're not intentionally doing that. See, so I learned those skills before I met David. Nice. And it's key for anything, like you said.
Absolutely. Guys, we're talking to Joanna Harabedian, author of 7 Mistakes Women Make That Repel Good Men and How to Reverse Them. The website is 7mistakesbook.com, 7 mistakes with an S, book.com. It's linked down below. So it's heartbreaking how many marriages end in divorce, especially here in the United States and among all the different demographics. There are high numbers among whites, blacks, other minorities, among religious couples, among Christian couples. You mentioned in the book that some 50% of adults are actually just single now, which is something with all of my social media, you know, in this business, you kind of spend a lot of time on social media. It's a little bit depressing, but it's a labor of love that we do for the viewer. But can you talk about that? I was truly shocked. Lots of stuff from your book, but I was shocked to know that about half of adults are single.
Yeah, it was shocking for me as well to learn that almost 50%, it's 49%, almost 50% of adults are single in the U.S., men and women. And my thoughts on this right now is I think a lot of it has to do with the cultural stereotypes that we've been programmed with over the years. And I'll just give you a recent example, like the Barbie movie. I did not go see it. But in one of the scenes in the Barbie movie, in one of the clips, the Kens are in the gray world. They're unhappy and they're kind of lifeless. The Barbies are in the colorful world and they're happy. Well, they're alone and they're happy. And the Ken dolls, they're alone and they're miserable. And the whole movie is about not connecting heart to heart as male and female. So we are getting all this cultural programming that's happening. You know, it was fascinating when I interviewed some of these men for the book. This shocked me. I had a couple men and they were young and more of like the millennial generation. They were in their 20s. And I had a couple of them say that, you know, they love women, but they've been so wounded by women, the ones that they had met. Not all women do that, obviously, but the ones that they had met, and they were two different guys. And they said that they've had so much drama and rejection that they experienced from the women that they attracted that they don't want to be with a woman. And they'll be with a guy, but not because they want to. And I was floored. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely floored. And this is one of the reasons that I think my book is really key for such a time as this, because God created us to be a man and a woman. And we each bring those strengths and we complement each other. And God took the woman out of the rib and together they ruled, you know, the Garden of Eden. Together they were given the mandate over that garden and everything that was in it. And so the enemy has really tried to come in to divide that, to break it and to tear it apart, as we're seeing in the fabric of our marriages and relationships. And so, but in my conversations with these men, a lot of them have been wounded with these superhero deactivators, and or they've been rejected, or that, you know, they've been mistreated or whatever. Now, women also have their pain. So, you know, we're not pointing at that right now, but so my heart is for us women to get to this place where we relearn how to become what I call a kingmaker. You know, there's a lot, men have had these man-breaking experiences where they've been broken. by the words, by the actions, by the thoughts. And this is the other thing I did not know, that a man's most important opinion to a man from talking to these men and interviewing them across the board is the one of their wife, of their girlfriend, of the woman they love. And so when she is not, doesn't know how to be a superhero activator, she doesn't know how to be a kingmaker, she's broken herself and hasn't had healing, then it's like stabbing him in the heart over and over with her words or with public shaming or nuances that are put downs that they're supposed to be funny, but they're really not. You know, we hear, how often do we hear this? Happy wife, happy life. Right? But why isn't, aren't we saying happy spouse, happy house? Because if both spouses are happy, now we have a happy house and we'll have happy children. But if only one is being served, the Whiffum syndrome, what's in it for me, and the other one's giving, 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 and not receiving, now we have this imbalance that we're currently seeing. And so men struggle with rejection already. You know, how many times when guys are dating, are they rejected by a woman? I know so many, you know, that are rejected, and women aren't doing it to be intentional, but this is a factor. And so that's why we have to get back to learning how to be a kingmaker as a woman and a queenmaker as a man. Now, if you look at the game of chess, the queen rules the board in the game of chess. She can wipe out the opponents that try to attack the king. So her role, her job, is to protect the heart of the king. And so as women, I feel like I had to learn this. I had to learn how to protect the heart of the king. And there was a guy I dated for a little period of time before, you know, my single journey. And he really taught me something very significant, because at that time I was what I title in my book in one of the chapters is the director. The director is also known as the backseat driver. And I had a tendency to pick man projects that I could control. I could tell him what to do, tell him what to change, how to do it. And I had picked a man project. And, you know, I felt in my supreme wisdom that, you know, he needed to lose weight. And I felt like if he could get counseling, then, you know, he would be better. And there was nothing right about him that I would pick out in him. It was everything. Oh, well, you should wear this color. Those clothes don't look here. Do this style. And so he finally was brave enough to say to me, "Why are you even dating me, Joanna?" And I was shocked, and it stopped me in my tracks. And I went, "Oh my God."
Dun, he's like, "Dun, dun."
Yes, indeed. He said, "What if I talked to you this way? What if I told you, you need to buy face cream for the wrinkles in your eyes? You have bags in your eyes. You look like chicken eyes. What if I told you you needed to lose weight? What if I told you you were fat?" He said, "How would you feel? We wouldn't be here, would we?" And I was like, "You're right." And so I had to humble myself and apologize to him. I said, "You know, I'm so sorry. You're right. I didn't realize what I was doing. Please forgive me." And so we remained friends, and he did forgive me. But boy, let me tell you, that was a big lesson to me. Then I had to look at, okay, why did I pick a man project? Well, if I dug down, which I did, part of me was afraid to attract a real guy that I knew I wanted to have, but I didn't feel worthy enough on the inside. So that was related to my identity. I didn't realize that I felt undeserving, and I was afraid of getting hurt again. And so if I did attract the man of my dreams at that time, I was afraid he wouldn't love me or like me, and I would get hurt and I would be rejected. So the root of that was the fear in me of getting hurt, not feeling worthy enough, and not good enough. And so we deep dive into this in the book. And so if I did it, ladies, you can do it too if you're in that place.
Wow. You know, the Bible talks explicitly about the power of the tongue. And so I'll share two different opinions. This one's a fact. This is a God-breathed fact. It's in the book that the tongue can tear down, it can destroy, it can cause irreparable harm. So this other thing is, this is a Joe Mobley opinion based on my study of the scripture and what I know about the character of God. So just, I'm always clear about that. So if you're a new listener, this is the first time you're hearing that because it's been a while. You know, there's the chapter and verse truth, and then there are some opinions that I come up with based on my study of the word and my knowledge of the character of God. So it says in Genesis that God breathed life into man, and we're created in God's image. Obviously, we can't do what God can do, but we can. God has inspired us, encouraged us, designed us to do some things like him. And I think that you can breathe life into the people around you by encouraging them, by speaking positively around them. In my life, my wife's default setting is to be my biggest cheerleader, no matter how crazy the thing that I want to do is. You know, I was on the human trafficking task force. You're supposed to do it for 12 to 24 months. I did it for 6 years. She said, hey, you can do it. You feel like God wants you to do this, you can do it. Army was supposed to send me to get my master's at George Washington. They pulled the carpet out from under the rug weeks before I was supposed to go. The college said, you can still do it, but it's a full-time load. And I'm a husband and a father and a full-time soldier in the United States Army. And I'm like, okay, do I pile on a really intense grad school program onto this? And my wife said, you can do it. You know, if this is something you want to do, you can do it. You're going to crush it. This podcast, I'm an intensely private person. I hated the push that I felt for so long and so strongly to launch a podcast. And it was everything between COVID and the George Floyd nonsense and all of the fake news that came out of that. And I'm just like, but all of these things, my wife's default setting is she might say, hey, it's going to be hard. It's going to be tough. This is going to suck. But she always said, you can do it. Yep. And it's going to be awesome. That changes me in a way that I can't truly articulate. But I know in that way that she speaks life into me. She speaks positivity into me, and it's like a freaking superpower. It's like she's like over there pumping me up, and then I'm like, yeah, I can do it.
Hey, that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And that's, she's a superhero activator. She's activating the inner superhero within you to do what God's called you to do and to do anything.
Well, it's a lot of fun. It gets crazier and crazier. We're pregnant with our fifth child right now. So it.
Oh, congratulations. Wow. That's awesome.
Thank you. So, you know, speaking of God, talk to us about the importance of surrendering to God and what you call the self-discovery that happens in that whole journey.
Yes, this is really, I think, one of the key components is the first step is we have to surrender to God. We have to give him permission to look within our heart. You know, I love Jeremiah 29:11, where it says, for I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. And as you seek me and you seek me with all your heart, I will be found by you. And that last sentence, if you seek me with all your heart, that's key. And what that means is bearing our heart to the Lord. He's been my best counselor, my best shrink, and he's given me all these insights and understanding. And, you know, I have my therapy sessions with God. You know, when I was growing, I had to go through healing from the trauma that I had being married to Mr. Wong, you know, and I had my screaming moments to God, you know, and he was so gracious. You know, when I had those moments, he would give me music. He would give me a song. He would speak to me, you know, in these different ways. And I was real, you see, and that's how we get to know God with all our heart is by just being real. He already knows what's there, but we have to give him permission to shine the light like the doctor in our heart. And it's kind of like being Lazarus, right? Lazarus was in the tomb. He was dead. It stank in there. He had the grave clothes on. Jesus said, come forth, Lazarus. He came out with those grave clothes on. So we have to let God take us out of that tomb with the grave clothes on and then allow those grave clothes to be taken off so that we can really blossom into who we're created to be and truly love people the way that we're called to love them. You know, the second commandment is love others as you love yourself. Well, how can we possibly even begin to fulfill that commandment if we hate ourselves? And I address that in the book. And so it's learning to come into that knowledge of the beautiful you, as I titled chapter 2, the beautiful you who's created in the image of God. Isaiah chapter 62, verse 3 says, "You are a royal beauty in the hand of Yahweh, a royal diadem," which is a crown, "in the hand of your God." And it's being able to come into that place, being having the courage to look at yourself, the good, bad, and the ugly, with grace, with compassion, because Jesus has compassion on us. That's why he died. And so when we have the courage to go to those hard places, that's how we can blossom and receive the blessings that God has for you. So,
you know, a huge part of all of this is submission. The word says there's a way that seems right to a man, but in the end leads to death. And just like you said, now I don't have Jeremiah 29 from 11 memorized, but picking up at 13, if you seek God, if you seek me, you will find me. If you seek me with all your heart, these things are promises. We don't have to figure it out. We don't have to reinvent the wheel, find a totally unique path. These names of God mean stuff. Healer, counselor. There's some wise counsel here, guys. It's in the book. You can't see it. Here it is. It's in the book. It's there. It's available for you right now. And just from speaking with you, Joanna, I can tell that a lot of this wisdom, a lot of these truths are distilled in the book. So whether you're married or single, ladies, buy this book. Husbands, buy this book for your wife. Single guys, buy this book and be able to better articulate. I know we don't like to talk about feelings, so we'll just keep it a secret. Better articulate what you're feeling. And when a woman says something to you, when your girlfriend, your fiance, your wife says something to you, be mature and secure enough to say, hey, this is how that makes me feel. And I know you don't want to make me feel that way. Which is, I think is it Dr. Wheat talked, the guy that wrote Love and Respect, I think, talks about this very thing, which kind of brings me to, wait, we're always so short on time. Goodness gracious. It brings me to, I just want to ask two fun questions and then we'll finish off with the book. So if you could get everyone in the world to read and understand one book, can't be a religious text. All Christians would pick the Bible. All Muslims would pick the Quran, and on and on and on. And this book is already asterisked in there. Okay, so everyone's already read and understands your book. But if you can get everyone to read and understand, really understand one book, what would it be, and maybe why?
Well, that's, you know, I've never been asked that question. I would say what comes to my mind is a book called Jet Ride to Hell, Journey to Freedom. And my husband, actually, Dr. David, wrote this book, and it is a riveting, amazing story of coming out of bondage into freedom. And he was raised in a beautiful home with, you know, good Christian parents and a Jewish mama, you know, who loved the Lord, and ended up going the wrong way and stealing jet planes for the Cali cartel and being a trafficker. And his entrepreneurial gifts were misused for the enemy. And then his mother prayed, God, please take him, but don't let him die. Don't let him, you know, die like that. And then that week after his mother prayed, he got arrested in a reverse sting operation by the feds. And what was supposed to be a 5-year sentence ended up being a 20-year sentence through a crooked prosecutor and judge. I mean, and this book is transformational as well. So if anyone can think of anything, that would truly be a book I would recommend, because whether you're saved or unsaved, you will get saved. God will speak to you. If you've been a Christian for a long time, we've had this feedback. Oh my gosh, God took me deeper. I didn't even know, realize, and it will be impactful.
You know, it's, I tell people all the time, I saw a blurb of this book on your website when, or maybe it was on your husband's website when I was researching for the show. And I tell people all the time, transnational crime organizations, terrorists, drug cartels and cartels in general, these people aren't stupid. They're actually running empires like a business. They're not, we have this idea of street gangs, but like the organized crime organizations, they're highly intelligent, they're sophisticated. It's not like Netflix makes it out to be. But the thing that I thought about when you were telling your husband's story is people always think this. People always think, am I good enough to have been, if the Bible were still being written today, would I be in it? And the analysis is usually, am I a good enough person? But in my mind, I'm just like, that's such a foolish thought. It's almost like, am I a bad enough person to have been a Bible character? 'Cause they did some stuff.
Oh, they did, man.
They did some stuff. Yeah. Am I a bad enough person who the evidence of God's power in my life and that transformation would make me eligible? Not the person who's born into the religious family, studied the word and had a solid relationship with God all the way through, which is great. That's a great testimony. But it's not everyone's testimony, and that's okay.
No, it's not. It's not. And you know, and Jesus said he came for the sinner. He came for the bad person. Look at the thief on the cross when he was dying. You know, he repented of his wicked life that he had led right there on the cross. And Jesus said, you will be with me this day in paradise. And that's the amazing grace of God. No matter what we've done, Jesus' amazing grace that he did on the cross is what sets us free, and we can be born again, literally born a new person through Christ.
Yeah, it's wild. It's wild. Yeah. Ah, it's the best. The other, just for kicks and giggles question, you guys are international speakers. Traveling is such an experience, and there's always some unexpected things that happen. So what's the most interesting place, or maybe your favorite place that you've traveled? Or what's the worst travel experience you have? You can tell us one of those.
Well, you know, we've had several amazing things. One of my favorite places is Italy. I just love Italy. It's magical. And I think one of the coolest things that God has done with us is we went on this cruise. This was last year. And so we got one of those deals, you know, it was MSC Cruises, and they give you this option to upgrade. Now, at the time that we went, I had really wanted to be in the yacht club because you could upgrade to the yacht club. And we had been on that cruise with some friends time before, but we didn't get the yacht club. And I was really sad, and I really just wanted the yacht club. So this time, when David and I went by ourselves, all of a sudden, we got accepted for the upgrade. You bid on the upgrade. And then we were put into the double suite. The double suite was on the 18th floor, and we had two butlers. Every need was catered to. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner was in this beautiful, exclusive restaurant. We had our own deck for the pool and everything. And it was so incredible because it was like God answering the cry of my heart. Like, I really wanted to get upgraded to the yacht club, and God did that. And it was amazing. It was awesome.
It sounds so like it.
Yeah. And you know, what's really funny is when we were on the cruise previously, we were just in the regular, we had the regular cabin. It was beautiful. It was very pretty. It was MSC Cruises. And we went to get on the elevator. Now on those cruises, those elevators, man, they are busy, and you wait for a while. You end up walking up the stairs sometimes. And so we had been waiting for 5 minutes, at least 5 minutes, for the elevator. And then the elevator shows up, and then it's barricaded by the butler. And he's like, sorry, VIP, can't get on. Sorry, VIP. And I'm looking, I'm like, oh man. And so then when we got upgraded in the second cruise, we were the ones in the elevator. And I felt so bad for the people because they were in our position where we were, where he's like, sorry, VIP, you can't get on. And he's like shutting the door on him. And I'm like, down. But see, that's God's grace. That's how he answers the desires of our heart, you know, and he blesses us abundantly more than we can ever ask or imagine. So those are my two little travel stories.
Man, I've never been on a cruise. I still haven't figured out if I really want to do a cruise or not. But for Europe, I think Italy is either at the top or second on the list for us. It might be Paris might be first. Italy is probably number one for me. There's so many different things to see. I really want to go see the Vatican. Like, that is something that I have to do. My children and I, or the three older children and I, we watched like a virtual YouTube tour. And it's just the artwork, the history, it's just wonderful in there. So I've got to go. I've got to go.
You'll do it. You'll do it. You'll absolutely love it. The Vatican's very interesting. The artwork and the architecture is stunning. Spiritually there, it's kind of a creepy feel energetically, but it's stunning. And we won't go into that conversation right now, but you know, it's definitely worth, you know, going to see the architecture. And one thing I love about Italy is, you know, the food there is, it's amazing because it's organic, you know, it's grown in soil that is farmed right. You know, everything's farmed to table. It's fresh. Oh my gosh. We had pizza and gelato and we walked everywhere.
Ah, man, that sounds amazing. I fully expect to get to some real hearty debates in Italy. And if I get to go to Jerusalem, probably get into some good hearty debates there as well. Well, as always, the hour just flies by. And I'm always like, man, if I could be one of those guys that has a 2 or 3 hour podcast, I would totally do it. Guys, the book is available at 7mistakesbook.com. That's the number 7, mistakes with an S, book.com. The link is below wherever you're listening, wherever you're watching. Before we go, Joanna, I want you to just speak directly to the listener about why they need to get this book, about the life-changing truths that are in it. And just, I don't get paid for this, folks. Two new found friends here having a conversation about how amazing God's been to us and how you can have that too. And your relationship, your marriage is a big part of that. So just take whatever time you like and just tell people why they need to get this book.
Well, I'll tell you, my life was transformed. I know what it's like to wake up to an empty bed. I know what it's like to feel dissociated and disconnected from your spouse. You know, I learned that from my first marriage to Mr. Wrong. And so I promise you, you read this book and you apply the principles and you work on them and you learn those skills, you're going to have different results in your life. If what you're doing right now isn't working for you, if you are single and you've been single for a while and you're wondering why God hasn't brought you that man of your dreams, then I encourage you to read the book. If you're married and maybe your marriage is okay, but it's not great, I encourage you to read the book because this is about you. It's about the inner transformation on the inside. And maybe your marriage is bad right now. Maybe you're feeling completely disconnected from your husband. This is going to help you get back into that connection. And as you give God the opportunity to make some changes within yourself, as you give yourself permission to change your mind, given new information, I promise you, things are going to shift. They're going to change. And I'm going to hear your testimony on my show and how you got what God has done for you through your book. Just like the woman who attended the conference, she was on the verge of divorce and her marriage was completely turned around because she gave herself permission to change her mind, given new information, and she had the courage, she practiced courage to look at herself and make changes within herself. So if I could do it, if she did it, so can you.
Awesome. Well, Joanna, thank you so much for being here. Guys, the website is 7mistakesbook.com, where you can get Joanna's book, that's the website again. Where did I put the title of the book? All right, it's over here on the screen, where you can get the book, 7 Mistakes Women Make That Repel Good Men and How to Reverse Them. Make sure you check out our sponsor for tonight's episode. Give them a shout out. Check out their products. It's thejoemobleyshow.com/ZStack, the letter Z and stack, like, I don't know, a stack of stuff. The link is below. The link to Joanna's book is below, as well as her website. Highly encourage you to check it out. Joanna, thank you so much for being on the show. It was an absolute blast. The hour just goes by too fast, which always happens, but it's a testament to an awesome guest and a great time. So I completely forgot to tell people this. Happy Valentine's Day. This is the Valentine's Day episode. Yeah, maybe I'll drop some kind of plug or chocolate or something at the top of the show. But yeah, happy Valentine's Day. If you're in the Lonely Hearts Club, order the book and get that sorted out. Yeah, that's all the time we have. We will see you guys next week. Actually, we'll see you on Thursday and next week. Bye. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be the glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. If that was the first prayer you've ever prayed, I hope it won't be the last. Until next time, this is The Joe Mobley Show.